I just think that it's very important that we understand where that is, where the regions of the four regions are, and also that the little horn is the same as the little horn in Daniel 7. So that's very important to understand. The little horn in Daniel 7 is the same as Daniel 8. Okay? So then we continue down this path of the second kingdom, which is Iran, to the third kingdom, which is Turkey. We see this war that is coming true. And then we have the little horn that's going to rise from the four regions to where it, to, you know, rise out of that. And we will discuss more right now. So let's go through what region the little horn rises from, which region will the Antichrist rises from. Again, the four regions are the Seleucid, which is the northern division. Then you have the Ptolemy, which is the southern division. Then you have Cassandra and Lysimus. So let's read the passage, and we'll have to go through a little point of direction, and we'll see where the Antichrist rises from. So in the fourth kingdom, or in the four regions, it says this, okay? After it's broken into four, after the little horn rises, this is what it says. And in verse 9, and out of one of them came a little horn which grew exceedingly great towards the south, towards the east, and toward the glorious land. So if he's going towards the south to begin with, he's coming from the north, okay? The northern division is the Seleucid division. You guys can look this up online, okay? It's that region of Turkey, and it goes into Syria, into Iraq, and partly into Iran. It covers Lebanon, you know, things like that. So it's very important to understand that it's basically the Seleucid division, which he's rising out of, which, again, if you go online, it'll show you that. This confirms what the biblical prophets have said all along about who the name of the Antichrist is. They call him the Assyrian, or the king of Assyria. They call him the king of Babylon, which is Iraq. They call him the prince of Tyre, which is Lebanon. You know, they call him the king of the north, which is, again, Turkey. So, again, these are the things that we have to understand, that we have to put all the biblical prophecies together, because it we understand that they are all talking about a specific region that these prophecies are going to be fulfilled. Not saying that other countries won't be involved, not saying that Europe won't be involved, not saying any of that, but just saying that, hey, they're calling the Antichrist a specific name in Isaiah 11 through 23, Ezekiel 28 through 32, Jeremiah 40, you know, it doesn't call him a specific name in Jeremiah, but they're talking about the same region of where all of this is going to go down. So it's very important to understand that in Daniel 8, it eliminates Rome from Daniel 8. Why? Because it's about the Grecian Empire. It's about Turkey. And then it goes right into the Antichrist, okay? So you can't manipulate Daniel 8 any other way. All the Roman Empire theorists, they can't get around Daniel 8, except for, oh, that happened in the past. Well, according to Gabriel, we have three confirmations that this is for the end of the age, okay, the time of the end. So it's very important to understand that. Okay, so again, Daniel 8 takes us through Medo-Persia. The second kingdom is going to rise to power, and then they're going to have a major battle between with Turkey, okay, the third kingdom. Well, obviously the third kingdom is going to win, because that's why it's the third kingdom, and also because Daniel 8 says they were going to win. After Turkey becomes great, then the leader will die, okay, and then it will break up into four different regions. We've discussed those four different regions. They're going to be pretty much kind of the same with, the way that Alexander's empire broke up in, and he's going to rise through the Seleucid division, which again is that area of Turkey, Syria, Iraq, and into Iran, Lebanon, into Jordan a little bit. So that region, we have to go to the ancient maps. We have to understand that the way that Daniel was looking at that, looking at this, not the way that we look at the current boundary lines over in the Middle East. Okay, so it's very important. So once those break into four regions, so again, we got Turkey, the leader dies, it's going to break up into four regions with four of the kings, And then the Antichrist will rise up from one of those regions. According to the geography, that region will be the Seleucid division. And then also, I want you to turn to Revelation 2 with me, because Messiah himself confirms where the Antichrist will rise from. So, I'm sorry. Yes, in Revelation 2:12, the language he uses in this, we have to understand, is very present tense oriented, okay? So let's read this, and it'll tell us where Satan's throne is and where he dwells. In verse 12 it says, "And to the angel of the church in Pergamos write, these things says he who has the sharp two-edged sword, I know your works and where you dwell, where Satan's throne is. And you hold fast to my name and did not deny my faith, even in the days of with Antipas was my faithful servant and martyr, who did not deny my faith, even who was killed among you, where Satan dwells." Okay, so again, where Satan's throne is and where Satan dwells. So those are very important things, because guess what? Pergamum is located in Turkey, okay, Western Turkey. Again, here we go. We're talking about the same country again, Turkey. Turkey, Turkey, Turkey. Everywhere you look in the Holy Bible, in Jeremiah, in Ezekiel, in everywhere you look, in Daniel, you go to Revelation 13, the third kingdom, Turkey. It's the main hub, okay, and that it's going to be the main hub, because that's where he's going to rise from. In that, when I say Turkey, that's Seleucid division, which goes into Iraq, which goes into Syria, which goes into Iran. That's why he's called those names that we just discussed, the king of Babylon, the prince of Tyre, the king of the north, the Assyrian, the king of Assyria, because he's saying, hey, guys, that region, this is where he's going to rise from, is that region. So we can't take Daniel 8 any other way other than it's a very detailed timeline of what's going to occur. Once we get past the first kingdom, and we'll find out where we are next week, okay, exactly what kingdom we are in next week, we'll know exactly according to the prophecy and according to what's happening in the world events, again, from that 1948-1967 marker. But once Iraq falls, we could just turn to Daniel 8, and it will literally take you to the promised land. It really will, because if you look at it, it tells you the second kingdom is going to rise, the third kingdom is going to come, it's going to smash it, it's going to go to war with it, it's going to crush it, rage at it, trample it, and then it's going to become great, which is Turkey. The leader is going to die, the large horn is broken, and then it's going to split up into four regions. And through those four regions, then the little horn comes up out of the four, and we just confirm that it's going to be the Seleucid division, which encompasses that region we've been talking about, Iraq, Syria, Turkey, Iran, Lebanon area. And then here we go. You're looking at basically, you know, the time of Jacob's trouble and the seven-year tribulation and that sort of thing, because the Antichrist will rise, he'll become great, he'll make a covenant and things like that. So there's really Daniel 8, the vision of Daniel 8 of what's going to occur at the time of the end. Again, the time of the end is the three, is confirmed three times by Gabriel in Daniel 8, 17 through 20. Gabriel says three times, this is for the time of the end of the age. And according to the timeline that we are on, 48, 67, we'll see Iraq rise, we'll see Iran rise, then we'll see Turkey rise, then we'll see the leader die, the four regions, and then the little horn will rise from the four region, which we just discovered as the Seleucid division. Okay, so it's Daniel 8 is the amazing prophecy that all believers really need to put in their back pockets, like I said, because it confirms Daniel 2 and Daniel 7. Because Daniel 2 and Daniel 7 just talks of the four kingdoms and then Messiah's kingdom. This prophecy gives us more detail of how it's going to occur between the second and the third kingdom. And next week we will understand where we are with that. Okay, so let's go to the interpretation of it. And some of this will be kind of redundant, but we'll confirm what we've just spoke of. So we'll begin at verse 18, because we've already gone through verse 15 and 17, which basically says this vision is for the time of the end. So let's go to verse 18. It says this, "Now, as he was speaking with me, Gabriel, while Gabriel was speaking with Daniel, I was in a deep sleep with my face to the ground, but he touched me and he stood me upright. And he said, look, I am making known to you what shall happen in the latter time of indignation, for at the appointed time the end shall be. Then the ram, which you saw having two horns, are the kings of Media and Persia, which we've confirmed is Iran. The ram is Iran. And then the goat, in verse 21, he says, is the kingdom of Greece or Yavan, which is Turkey. So it confirms what we've just discussed. The large horn that is between its eyes is the first king. So what does that mean? It's saying, hey, when Turkey rises, there's going to be that first king, that large horn that's going to be in charge, okay, the leader of Turkey. Okay, he will be the first king. And then let's continue. As for the broken horn, okay, which you saw, the broken horn and the four that stood up in its place, the fourth kingdom shall rise out of that nation, but not with its power. So again, it's confirming. When the large horn breaks, when the first king dies, the four regions are going to occur, okay, out of Turkey, okay, but not with its power. The strength of it will not be in there, okay. And then in verse 23, it says, and in the latter time of their kingdom, okay, so at the appointed time, at the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, a king shall rise, having fierce features, who understands sinister schemes. His power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. He shall destroy fearfully, and he shall prosper and thrive. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. This is obviously talking about the Antichrist, okay? He comes against the holy people. He comes against Jerusalem. Sinister schemes. Okay, his power shall be mighty. This is the Antichrist. Okay, in verse 25, it says, through his cunning, okay, who else was cunning? Satan was cunning in Genesis 3:1. He will basically possess, incarnate the Antichrist. He shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule, and he shall exalt himself in his heart, which again goes to Isaiah 14, okay, 14 through 16. And then he shall prosper, or he shall destroy many in their prosperity. He shall even rise against the prince of princes. Okay, of course, that is Messiah. So this is clearly speaking of Antichrist. But he shall be broken without human means, which means Messiah will destroy him. And the vision and the meanings of mourning was told to me, true, therefore seal up the vision, because it refers to many days in the future, which again recurs, which again tells us it's going to occur at the end of the age. So let's sum up Daniel 8. Okay, and all this symbolism. Again, Daniel used symbolism to speak of his prophecies in Daniel 2, Daniel 7, and Daniel 8, okay, and others, but these are the ones that we're focused on. Okay, and what is it? They all line up the same. Okay, Daniel 2, 7, and 8 are the same in their respective kingdoms. Daniel 2 and Daniel 7, they are exactly the same, which is Iraq 1, Iran 2, Turkey 3, Antichrist Kingdom 4. Okay, and I'm using their current names, but we've already gone through their ancient names. And then Daniel 8 tells us how the second kingdom is going to fall to the third kingdom. Okay, it's a beautiful thing. So Daniel's given us, he confirmed it by the mouth of two or three witnesses or prophecies, okay, and it's confirmed through other prophets. It shall be established. He's telling us, hey, guys, these four kingdoms, Iraq, Iran, Turkey, and the Antichrist kingdom is going to rise. But I'm going to give you some insight on how the second and the third kingdom come about, you know, the transition to the third kingdom. There's going to be a major war between Turkey and Iran. According to Daniel 8, Turkey's going to win that battle. That's why it's the third kingdom, okay, the latter kingdom. And then once Turkey becomes great, its leader will die. It will break into four regions, and then the Antichrist, the little horn, will come up into one of those four regions, which is, again, the Seleucid division, okay? And then we're pretty much going into tribulation time, you know, after that. So, like I said, this vision will take you because, again, as we discussed last week, the first three kingdoms are the beast kingdom. So whenever Antichrist rises, just like we discussed in Daniel 7, okay, the beast kingdom's already going to be there. Those four regions that it breaks into, well, that's four of the kings, just like we discussed last week. Okay, the other three, we know who they are, Libya, Egypt, and Sedan, okay, we discussed last week, that's Daniel 11:40-45. So we understand who the seven kings of the ten are, okay, and he's telling us, okay, that when, that's why I think Daniel 8 is so important, because when he rises, okay, that conglomerate kingdom, again, Revelation 13, what does it say? I saw a lion, a bear, and a leopard. That's the beast kingdom. We identified that as Iraq, Iran, and Turkey last week. That area that I keep mentioning, that Seleucid division, is so important to understand that, because that is the area. Okay, we can sit here and debate on who the other three kings are all day. Okay, we'll wait and see. But you can be assured that they're going to be in that area of that conglomerate land area of the lion, the bear, and the leopard, which is Iraq, Iran, and Turkey. Okay, so it's very important to understand that. So this prophecy takes us exactly to the time of Jacob's trouble, because it's pretty much telling us once Turkey smashes Iran and wins that war, then the beast kingdom is going to basically come about after that, the four regions, and then you'll get into the four kings, the ten kings, and then you have Antichrist rising, which we discussed in Daniel 7 with the fourth beast. And then also this confirms that as well through just more detail of how that's going to occur. So again, Daniel 8 is one of my favorite passages, because as we're going to discover next week, we can kind of see this in a way. I'm tipping some hints next week, but we can kind of witness this beginning to manifest itself in the Middle East. I think anyone, when we get to next week, I think if you've been keeping up with the studies and keeping up with the weeks, or even if you haven't, if you just listen to the summary and it kind of makes sense, come next week, it's going to be like, wow, you know, I can see this, you know, because once we understand and look at the current events of the Middle East, you know, and then we look at the prophecies, knowing the prophecies first, okay, this is not something where we just look at the Middle East and try to plug this stuff in. You know, but if we understand 1948, if we understand 1967, if we understand Psalms 102:16-18, that this is the time of the end, folks, we're living in it. If you want Bible prophecy, you got it. Okay, you're living in it. We should be thankful. We should have our eyes open. We should have our 3D glasses on, ready and willing to do the Lord's will, you know, and that sort of thing. So it's a privilege to see this to come to fruition. We obviously need to be responsible with it and not get too ahead of ourselves, like setting dates or anything like that. But that's why Daniel wrote about these kingdoms. You know, I tell people all the time, if you want to know God's prophetic timeline, understand Daniel's four kingdoms. Okay, understand Daniel's four kingdoms. Because if you understand Daniel's four kingdoms, and you believe we're living at the time of the end of the age, okay, and I say end of the age because literally it's not the end of the world, okay, because we've got 1,000 years that Messiah is going to return and rule the earth. So when people talk about the end of the world, they have no idea what they're talking about. It's the end of the age because we at least have 1,000 more years, okay, 1,007 more years because there's a 7-year tribulation. Okay, so I tell people that, but this is exciting stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, this is very exciting for us to witness, because as we will see next week, and it will be very detailed, we are witnessing these kingdoms coming to fruition. And it's totally amazing to me. It's a blessing. And I hope that you will be able to see it as well. And I hope you're already seeing it. You know, if you keep up with the Middle East current events, it should be pretty obvious, you know, where we are right now with who is the leader over there, who is the news talking about over there, who's the major kingdom that we're seeing in power. It matches perfectly to Daniel's kingdom. Okay, and we'll discuss all of that. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself because I'll give it away because it's pretty obvious, but we'll go through that in more detail next week. Okay, now, again, to finalize Daniel 8, where is Rome? It's not in there. If it doesn't fit in Daniel 8, it doesn't fit in Daniel 7, and it doesn't fit in Daniel 2, and it doesn't fit in Ezekiel 38-39. It doesn't fit in Revelation 13. It doesn't fit. It doesn't fit. If it doesn't fit one, it doesn't fit all. What I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, fits everything. Smooth. Very smooth. Okay? It's smooth. You don't have to fit a square into a circle. You don't have to manipulate anything. It fits every prophecy, which it has to. It's got to fit every one of them, okay, for it to come to fruition. So it's very important to understand. So Daniel 8 debunks it, but to be thorough, We will go through Daniel 9:26 right now. If you want to turn to me, turn with me on that one, because this is the verse, whenever I start talking about what I'm speaking with you tonight, this is the verse that people come back with. Daniel 9:26 says the people who, you know, destroy the sanctuary is the one who's going to be the Antichrist, okay? And they are correct, okay? It says in Daniel 9:26, and we'll read this together. It says, and after 62 weeks, which this is kind of a, he's given us a mathematical equation here, Daniel. It says, Messiah shall be cut off, but not for himself. This is the first coming. And then it says this, and the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. Okay, so this is the verse where the Roman Empire theorists, they go to and they will not let go of, because they believe they have it figured out, because, excuse me, it says, and the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, which we all know, if we know our history, the Roman Empire destroyed the city and the sanctuary in AD 70. So people just automatically put that into the equation. Okay, it's Rome, and close their Bibles, and okay, I know all about Bible prophecy, I need to know. Okay, and again, I can see how they would look at it on the surface like that, because that did happen. However, when we really meditate on it, when we really pray about it, and we look at it, we look at this prophecy at a certain way, he writes it totally different from the other prophecies. Again, in Daniel 2, in Daniel 7, in Daniel 8, he speaks of beast. He speaks of metal components. He speaks of that in that way about kingdoms. Okay, he doesn't say the people, okay, when he's writing Daniel 2, 7, or 8. He's speaking of, he uses symbolism for those. So why did he use the people in Daniel 9:26 if he was speaking of the Roman Empire? That's the question that I have. Even though he wasn't talking about the Roman Empire, why would he use that language? He used that language so that we could differentiate the difference in the writing. Okay, when he writes about kingdoms, he's speaking of metal components, beasts, and things like that. Now all of a sudden he's saying, okay, then the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the sanctuary and the city. So what we have to do now is we have to find out who were the people. Who were the people that Daniel's talking about that came in and destroyed the sanctuary and the temple and the city? Okay, who were the people that actually worked for the Roman Empire? So we'll get into more historical things about the Roman Empire on other prophecies, Revelation 17 and things like that in weeks to come. But now let's look at who were these people. Most scholars, most Christians and Jews, look to Josephus, Flavius Josephus, as the most responsible historian there is. I believe you can ask anybody that, and they will say that he's the most accurate and responsible and the most renowned when it comes to Jewish history and also Roman history, because he recorded the events during that time. So to give a little bit of the back break, when the Roman Empire split into two regions, there was a western kingdom and an eastern side, okay? That's why everybody thinks the two legs in Daniel 2 is the Roman Empire, because it split into the east side and the west side, which it's not right, but I'm just giving, that's why people look at it that way. Okay, so General Titus, okay, of the Roman Empire, he was in command over the eastern division. Well, just think about this. If I moved to, you know, I live in the south, so if I moved to Michigan, you know, I wouldn't probably hire people from Florida or Georgia or anywhere like that to work for me. They'd be people from Michigan, right, just because they're in that area. So it's the same with General Titus. Whenever the Roman Empire was in Constantinople, basically, is where their headquarters was, he had to recruit people of the area, just like I said in the analogy. I mean, if I moved, I'd have to recruit in that area. More than likely, I would not be getting people from the south, you know, up there in Michigan. So the same thing with Titus, okay, that he was in Turkey now, okay, that Constantinople was in Turkey, okay, remember. So who did he get? Well, he got the people of the area, and the historian Josephus and also the historian Publius Cornelius Tacitus, they both recorded this. And I'm going to read you a couple of the quotes that they have, okay? The historians, and both of them, you can do your research on them, are very well renowned. And this is what they recorded. Okay, we'll start with Tacitus. Okay, his name is Publius Cornelius Tacitus. Okay, he said this. He said, the people that comprised the legions that destroyed Jerusalem and the temple, he said, were found in Judea, the three legions, the fifth legion, the tenth legion, and the 15th legion. And then he added the 12th legion of Syria and also the 18th legion and the third, which were from Alexandria, Egypt. Okay, he said this force was accompanied by a strong contingent of Arabs, okay, who hated the Jews with the usual hatred of neighbors. Okay, so he's telling us these legions are the people that lived in the land. He said they were Arabs, they were Syrians, okay, they were Turks, okay. So he confirms what Daniel, the people that have always hated the children of Israel, okay, the people who always hated Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and David, the Muslims, the Arab people that are not Christians, okay, who love the God of Israel, they have always hated it because of what? The Abrahamic covenant. They believe that Ishmael has the right to the lands. Well, we know what the Almighty said, that Isaac was the rightful seed to the promise. Okay, and here's here again. So the Legion 3 he was talking about is in Syria, Syrians. Legion 5, okay, was in Bulgaria. Legion 10 was Turkey, Syria. Legion 12 was Turkey, Syria, in Asia Minor. Okay, Legion 15, Syria. And Legion 18 was again in Egypt. So Tacitus is recording for us that the legions that Titus had to recruit from, they're all Arabs. Every one of them were Arabs who hated the children of Israel. Okay, and actually when you read, you further read into Josephus, he says that once they destroyed the temple, that General Titus was really upset. He tried to stop them, actually. You know, he recorded that. He actually tried to stop them from destroying the temple, because that's not what they were about. Like we've discussed in the past, the Roman Empire, yes, they went to war, but once they got order, okay, they wanted to collect money, okay, build roads and infrastructure and ching-ching, you know, collect money. They weren't about the everlasting hatred of the Arab people as a whole, okay, not saying all of them who, like I said, there's a lot of Christian Arabs, but the ones who are Muslim, the ones that hate the God of Israel, of course they're going to destroy the temple. It's totally against what they believe in. It's totally against what they stand for as a nation. And it says Ishmael is the father of the Arab nation. Okay, so Josephus records that as well. Okay, so let me read you a couple of Josephus's remarks to kind of stamp this, substantiate this for you. It says this. He says, so Vespasian, which was Titus's father, okay, so this, who's the emperor at the time of Rome, so Vespasian sent his son Titus, who came by the land into Syria, where he gathered together the Roman forces with a considerable number of auxiliaries from the kings in that neighborhood. So again, he recruited from Syria and got the people of the land. Okay, so here's some more. The greatest part of the Roman garrison was raised up out of Syria, and being thus related to the Syrian part, they were ready to assist. Again, confirming the people again. Okay, here we go again. I quote, the multitude of the Arabians with the Syrians cut up those that came up as supplements and searched their bellies, nor does it seem that any misery befell the Jews that were more terrible than this, since in one night's time about 2,000 of these deserters were thus infected. Okay, so then it says again, who were these? They were Turks, Egyptians and Syrians, and Arabs in general. So here you've got two renowned historians that most people will give credit to and will not have a problem saying that the legions that made up of Titus's army who destroyed Jerusalem and the temple were Arabs, Syrians, and Turks, which again is in that Seleucid division that I keep talking about that extends from Turkey to Syria to Iraq to a little bit of Iran to Lebanon to into little Jordan area, which basically is that area, okay? So, again, he's called the king of Assyria, the Antichrist. He's called the king of the north, Turkey. He's called the king of Babylon, Iraq. He's called all of these names to focus our attention on that region. So, of course, those people are going to have an everlasting hatred with the children of Israel. So once we also, in Daniel 9:26, when we go to the Hebrew word, well, again, we've got to kind of look beneath the surface, okay, about these prophecies and really understand the word for the people of the prince in Hebrew is A-M. It's like am. I am Chad, but okay, A-M. So that word means a united or common people, tribes or kinsmen. Okay, so that's what it means, that they're a united people. Okay, certainly the Arabs, the Turks, and the Syrians are not countrymen of the Europeans. Okay, they're just not. I mean, it's just not. I mean, that's just the way it is. Okay, it's not meaning anything bad towards any set of people there. It's just they are not kinsmen. They are not countrymen. They are not. Okay. Especially back then. Okay, so, I mean, they're two different cultures, which is okay, but Daniel is making a differentiation. He was making a difference in who these people were so we would understand it. Okay, so it goes along to show you that not only does Daniel 8 debunk it, which debunks Daniel 2 and Daniel 7 and everything else with the prophecies of Rome, Daniel 9 debunks it as well when you look beneath the surface and you look at the history of it, and when we understand that Daniel wrote, and the people of the prince who is to come. Okay, it didn't say, and the dog or the cat or whatever other animal that you want to put in there, the ram, the goat, you know, the gold, the silver. He didn't say that. He wasn't consistent with that in this prophecy. And again, we can believe that the Lord Almighty would have been consistent with Daniel to make sure that we're not misled, that we're not confused. He's not the God of confusion, right? He's not the God of secret. You know, he's open if we search his will and his way. So it's very important to understand that he wrote this prophecy for a reason, and to let us to understand that, hey, let's not be deceived. Let's look in the right areas, and it's very consistent. It matches absolutely perfect, okay, with the rest of the prophets and also the regions that every one of them still prophesy about. I mean, it's every one of them talk about a specific regions in the Middle East, the North Africa. It's over and over and over, just like we've been discussing these last 4 weeks. So Daniel 8, Daniel 9 confirms what we discussed in Daniel 2 and Daniel 7, okay? And we have reached the Daniel prophecies, if you will, to understand what the Lord's telling us in this time. It started in 1948 in Isaiah, 1967 in Psalms 102, okay? And then we've just discussed these last 3 weeks who the four kingdoms are going to rise before the second coming of Messiah. And they are, again, the Babylonian Empire, which is Iraq. In Daniel 2, it's the gold. Daniel 7, it's the lion. The kingdom number 2 that will rise after that is Medo-Persia, which is Iran. In Daniel 2, they're the silver. In Daniel 7, they're the bear. In Daniel 8, they're the ram. Okay? And then the third kingdom that will rise to power is Turkey, which is the Grecian Empire. In Daniel 2, they're the bronze. In Daniel 7, they're the leopard. In Daniel 8, they're the goat. Okay? And then the fourth kingdom, all across the board, is the Antichrist kingdom. In Daniel 8, the differentiating part in Daniel 8 is this, is it gives us the transition between the second kingdom and the third kingdom. It gives us insight on how these kingdoms are going to fall, of this major war that's going to occur between Turkey and Iran. And just like we've discussed, Turkey is going to win this battle, okay, whenever it occurs in the future, okay? So there you have it. It matches absolutely perfect, okay, with what Daniel's saying in Daniel 2, Daniel 7, Daniel 8. And like we saw in Revelation 13, he said, hey, the beast is going to be a lion, a leopard, and a bear. And those three kingdoms, again, are Iran, Iraq, and Turkey. So all of it fits smooth. I hope it's smooth for you. I hope it makes sense. I hope it works perfectly with it, because if you write it down on a piece of paper, it matches perfectly. Again, he's not the God of confusion. These are all the same prophecies about the same kingdoms. is confirmed in Revelation 13. And next week, what we'll do is we will discuss and we will discover where we are living at in today's world, okay? Right now, what kingdom are we living in? Okay, so I would challenge you in a humble way, just in fun, to kind of, if you're on board with, you know, what we've discussed, to look at the Middle East over the last two decades and kind of see what's occurred. Who used to be the superpower? Who is the superpower now? What do we see in the future? What's going on in the geopolitical arena over there? You know, and not everybody keeps up with it like I do or whatever, but at the same time, and I'm not saying that I'm right about everything either. I just think that if we really look at the geopolitical process over there and we're starting to see this and we understand who these three kingdoms are, and we have a good, you can kind of see all three of them, okay? And we'll see if any has fallen. We will see which one we're living in right now, and we'll see, hey, can we see one ahead of us? You know, that sort of thing. And hopefully by then we will say, okay, yes, we can definitely see that we're living in this certain kingdom, you know, if you will. And then once we do that, there's a certain prophecy that we can just follow as we enter in the last part of these prophecies with what Daniel's talking about. So next week's really, there isn't a scripture out there that we're going to be discussing. I might lead into some that I'm not thinking of right now, but it will be more of a, let's take a look of the Middle East and North Africa over the last two decades or so, or three decades, and see if we can, according to 1948, according to 1967, has Iraq risen and fallen? Has Iran risen and fallen? Has Turkey risen and fallen? Where are we according to all that? I'm not saying they have. I'm not saying we're not. We'll find out next week. But it is truly amazing that we're living in these times. So next week will be more of a conversation of historical, recent historical main. We're not going to go into the ancient times. We're going to go 30 years, 20 years, and bring it up to date, so to speak. And we'll get into some of the future kind of, I'm not going to be prophesying or anything like that, but we'll just, I'll just kind of give you some ideas and hints of my personal opinion of what I believe we're going to start to see in a certain area. I think it's very clear, and I believe once we discuss all of these things about what's going on in the geopolitical arena over the Middle East, I believe that you will be able to understand it as well, and it'll be clear. And then after that, what will occur is we will talk about who is Mystery Babylon. Okay, I'm sorry. Before that, I'm getting ahead of myself. Before we talk about who is Mystery Babylon, we'll talk about the Antichrist kingdom in a little bit more detail. Okay, in Revelation 17, we'll kind of go through that as well to be thorough. We know who the Antichrist kingdom will be. It's going to be the leopard, the bear, the lion, right? But we'll go into further detail. Again, we'll confirm it again just to be thorough of the Antichrist kingdom in Revelation 17. So that'll be in 2 weeks, and then we'll get into Mystery Babylon the following week. Who is Mystery Babylon? Well, it's not a mystery. Okay, again, God did not speak in secret. Okay, he told us who this kingdom was, or who this harlot is. He told us who it was in the biblical prophets. Okay, he didn't leave it up to me or anybody else to figure out who Mystery Babylon was. He told us exactly by name who Mystery Babylon is. Okay, so we'll go through that in 3 weeks, and then after that we'll get to, we'll go through the second coming. We'll go through the second coming of the Messiah with the three major battle points, okay, which will occur. Most people are familiar with Armageddon, but actually there's going to be Armageddon, and there's going to be two other major battle points in Jerusalem, in the Promised Land. And we'll go through those. We'll go through the prophetic foreshadows of those, which means that, yes, it's in the Bible, but when you read it in context, again, just like these kingdoms, it's going to occur again to its ultimate fulfillment, okay? So, and we'll go through that. I believe it's in Jeremiah 46, and we'll go through 2 Chronicles 20 and 2 Chronicles 32 or 34 as well. So we'll go through those, and we'll know the prophetic foreshadows of these three kingdoms. I'm sorry, these three battle points that will occur. And these three battle points align perfectly with a prophecy in Revelation that I think you'll be amazed at. You know, when you put these the distance, if you will, between these battles, it aligns perfectly with a mystery that a lot of people, you know, have been contemplating over some time now. So you should be very excited about that, but that'll be coming. And then we'll talk about the following week, the millennial reign, which most believers, believe it or not, they don't have an idea about the millennial reign. They might understand Jesus is going to reign for 1,000 years in Jerusalem, and that's it. But the prophets give us such clarity about how this kingdom is going to be. You know, what's going to occur? How is it going to be during the millennial reign with the Messiah? The prophets go into very deep detail about that. And then we'll follow that up with the New Jerusalem, and we'll go through as much as we possibly can about it, just like the prophet said, no eye has seen, or no ear has heard, or no imagination has imagined what the Lord God has got for all of us, his people, me and you, those who love him. So we will go through that as well in as much detail as possible in Revelation 21 and 22 to kind of give us a glimpse of that perfection that we'll be receiving, the New Jerusalem, the bride, if you will, as Revelation 21 says. So, and then the last week we will go through, it'll probably take 2 weeks for this. I have to talk to Linda about this because it's going to be 2 weeks, but we'll go through the Olivet Discourse, which is Matthew 24 and 25, which is very important in a lot of different ways. That's why it'll probably take really 2 weeks, because there's so much information that I want to share with you so that you can meditate and pray to the Lord God about. So it makes, you know, so you can understand some of the things that most believers don't realize that are in there. So it's very important. So we're still at the almost not even at the halfway mark of this journey, but we had to lay the foundation down. We had to lay it down to understand what's coming. Now we're on this timeline, as I think you can see. We're on this 1948, 1967. We just brought it up to date, okay, the last 3 weeks to where we are right now in 2017, almost 2018. So we're coming, we're bringing it all home, and then after we get through next week, we will start talking about future. Okay, we'll get into the Antichrist kingdom that will happen in the future. We'll get into Mystery Babylon happening in the future, Second Coming, Millennial Reign, New Jerusalem. Okay, so I hope you're with me on this timeline. It's very important. That's why I named the book God's Prophetic Timeline, because it is a timeline from 1948, which is a tremendous marker for a lot of prophecies, even my second book. 48 is a tremendous marker for a lot of different prophecies. And then we go into 67, then we go through the four kingdoms, and then we go to the second coming. And the four kingdoms, again, are Iraq, Iran, and Turkey. And then you have the final Antichrist kingdom before the stone, before his majesty comes back and reigns forever and ever. So I hope this makes sense. I appreciate it. I know we had some, maybe some, hopefully not, but we might have had some technical difficulties in the beginning. So I hope this makes sense. And actually, if we might be going through this lesson again, okay, if you just got in on the second half of it, we might be going through this again if it didn't come across the right way with the technical difficulties. So I apologize about that. And right now, if there's any questions or concerns or comments or anything, we can open up the lines for discussion. Or I believe you can write a message on here. This is my first time doing this, so please be patient with me. I'm still trying to learn how to actually operate this to the max, so be patient with me. But we can open this up for questions at the moment. One thing while we're waiting on someone to call in or type a message is this, is it's very imperative. I can't explain it enough. Whenever I speak with people about the prophecies, is to take them all as one. I mean, because they all work together. They all hinge together as one conglomerate, one solid prophecy. And yes, there's different fulfillments on each, you know, accordingly. In my second book, there's one that's about 3.5 years apart from each other, you know, in Jeremiah. So, you know, there are, you know, little bitty differences, but, You know, most of the biblical prophets are speaking of one time, and that is the day of the Lord. Not saying they didn't prophesy through the days of their events, of course, but the ultimate fulfillment is for the end of the age. And I would ask all believers to, no matter, I mean, I used to be a Roman Empire guy. I can admit that. You know, I grew up, I mean, that's just what you know. If you're a Gentile, most of the time you're going to be Roman Empire, you know, just because that's what we've been fed. It's kind of like the rapture, the pre-trib rapture and all that stuff. So many things are kind of indoctrinated within us, and I'm not, you know, criticizing or anything like that, but we just have to be Bereans of the Word. We have to study the Word. We have to look at it in context, and the context of it is God's everlasting covenants are going to be fulfilled. His promises, his eternal promises are going to be fulfilled in Jerusalem by the Messiah, by Yeshua, by Jesus, at his second coming on David's throne. He's going to reign for 1,000 years. That's really what it's all about, is the everlasting covenants. And once we understand who Satan brought against these covenants, okay, then just like the prophet Isaiah says, the end will be like the beginning, and from times things that are not yet fulfilled. Okay, so that means that the ancient enemies of Israel are going to bear down one more time during the time of Jacob's trouble, and you're kind of seeing that now with Islam. And these are the same people, okay, the Ishmaelites, the Edomites, these are the same regions, okay? And I want to say regions more than people because I don't want anybody to think that I'm kind of singling out one particular group of people at all. It's regions. He's interested in regions. He's interested in, number one, Jerusalem, the promised land. His promise is forever, everlasting promise. You know, we read that in Genesis 15 and 17. Everlasting means everlasting, okay? And then, who are those people who've always hated the God of Israel and his people? Okay, because of that Abrahamic covenant, because Ishmael is not the chosen one, because Edom, Esau, was not the chosen one, but Isaac and Jacob were. We can read this in the Torah from the beginning. God separated nations against nations. He divided brothers. I mean, okay, Isaac and Ishmael were stepbrothers, okay? Esau and Jacob were twins. They were twins, okay? And he divided them. And what did he say? He told Rebecca, two different nations. Okay, so we have to understand. We've got to go to the beginning to understand the end. And so many times, and I used to be guilty of this myself, is I just go to Revelation and, okay, it's Russia or it's Rome or it's whatever. And, again, we don't hear the terminology. We don't hear the radicalness. We don't hear the rhetoric from the European countries that says death to Israel and gas to the Jews and all this good stuff. We don't hear that over there. We might hear it from some of the Nazi people or something like that, but overall, who's saying this? Iran, okay? Iraq, okay? You're starting to see Turkey, okay, a little bit with it, you know, with what's going on there the last couple of years. So you're starting to see this massive revolt against the Jewish people from the Islamic world. You always have, but it's really coming to fruition now because I don't see the Austrians or the Spaniards or the Italians or the Brits or the Swedes. I don't see any of them saying death to Israel and all, you know, just constantly, and that's their ultimate mission, is to defy the God of Israel. Now, they might not be saved, okay, but that's not what their ultimate mission is to destroy Israel. But guess whose it is? Islam. It's written in their book, the Quran, okay, and the Hadith, you know, and the Sunnah. You know, all of those books are very, one thing, destroy Israel, defying the Messiah, defying Jesus, and we just have to understand that. So it's very important to understand that the end will be like the beginning, and I believe it's thoroughly clear throughout the scriptures that those people are today the regions of Islam. So we haven't received any callers. We would like to end on that note. Again, I want to say thank you for joining us tonight. Sorry about the technical difficulties in the beginning of the broadcast. Thank you for your patience with me. This is the first time I've sat in for missionary evangelist Linda. We appreciate it very much, and we ask God to always bless you throughout this week in all your endeavors. We'll see you next week. We thank you, and good night.